Factory Mutual Insurance against the Bobst Group. Mr. Gunn.
Please notice how much better looking Judge Flom has become in the last few minutes.
May it please this honorable court and my opposing counsel, my name is Jeffrey Gunn. I represent the appellant Bobst Group in this appeal of the dismissal of on summary judgment of Bobst Group's counterclaim for contribution against Factory Mutual Engineering Association, an entity whose interests were succeeded by Factory Mutual Insurance Company, the plaintiff in the underlying suit. Bobst Group's claim for contribution against Factory Mutual is based on a theory of negligent inspection. And it's based on facts that at least...
Let me ask you, Mr. Gunn, why we are here arguing about contribution before there has been a final decision about whether there is anything, any underlying judgment in which there could be contribution.
Well, Your Honor, I knew as soon as I saw you on the panel that that question would be asked me today.
Indeed.
I prepared for it.
And you should have discussed it in your briefs, but
Your Honor,
we'll do it now.
Let me, with regard to that, Your Honor, I would like to say this. This issue was addressed in connection with our motion to the district court for a final order. The final order, it was fully briefed, and it's part of the record. I rely essentially on the district court's order that this is a single issue.
Well, unfortunately, if the district court's order is correct, we certainly have no appellate jurisdiction. The district court said the reason he is entering a Rule 54B judgment is because it will help him to refine the issues to be tried. But our standard for Rule 54B judgments is that the issues have to be completely distinct from the issues that remain in the district court. Judge Moran has given powerful reasons why there's no appellate jurisdiction. You have to give some kind of different reasons.
My understanding, Your Honor, in connection with the brief that I submitted to the district court, which, by the way, is item number 94 in the record.
Yeah, we're not going to do that. We will call for separate jurisdictional briefs here.
I understand, Your Honor.
But the job is to talk to this court, not
I understand.
To incorporate documents.
But I simply want to mention that the argument that I'm going to make now is set forth in that brief with citations to other cases. My understanding in the Seventh Circuit, if there is a dismissal of a third party in a third-party action, that renders that particular issue...
All claims involving one party are separately appealable.
Correct.
But Bobst Group, the appellant here, is still a party in the underlying litigation in the district court. We do not have a case in which all claims involving one party are over.
We do with regard to Factory Mutual Engineering Association, Your Honor. Factory Mutual Engineering Association is now separate and apart from this litigation. It has been dismissed effectively. Now, certainly, Factory Mutual Engineering could have brought a motion asking for a final order. They certainly could have, to make certain that there would be finality. I don't understand why there should be a distinction for us, precluding us to do the same.
Well, that will be an interesting issue for you to address in your separate memoranda. Is there any case that you would rely on for that proposition?
I only rely on the general proposition that insofar as there is a single claim in this particular instance, that is final, and that there is no just...
In other words, you have no case.
Well, I guess I don't, Your Honor. I suppose that, as I said before, I am somewhat prepared to argue that.
It's obvious that we will need separate briefs from the parties on this issue. There are two more jurisdictional questions in this case. Both of them have to do with subject matter jurisdiction in the district court. There are lots of additional parties in this case, and some of them appear to have New Jersey citizenships. I'm not sure how they got to be parties, given that your client is a citizen of New Jersey. Is this a claim of supplemental jurisdiction?
It would be in a third-party action.
The plaintiff... What is the basis of jurisdiction? Is this a claim of supplemental jurisdiction? It can't be original jurisdiction because we don't have complete diversity. Was it a claim of supplemental jurisdiction under 1367?
Let me say this, Your Honor. We do have complete jurisdiction, do we not, between the original plaintiff and the original defendant in this case?
Yes.
With regard to the third...
getting additional parties in that spoil complete jurisdiction then requires some other jurisdictional basis. It could be a claim under federal law, but I can't see any. It could be a claim
correct.
Under the supplemental jurisdiction. But Section 1367B precludes supplemental jurisdiction over additional parties that destroy complete diversity. It says you cannot use supplemental jurisdiction for claims under Rules 14, 15. Well, there's a list in 1367B. So my jurisdictional question is, how do we get other New Jersey parties in consistent with the language of 1367B?
Well, I believe there's only one other New Jersey party.
Well, we'll come to that. There is at least one. There may be more.
Okay. I'm unaware of any others. With regard to that other party, they are a third-party defendant. They are not a direct party defendant.
There's nothing magic about that. Yes. Bringing in third-party defendants requires an exercise of federal jurisdiction. What is its basis?
Ancillary jurisdiction, or what you call supplemental.
Ancillary jurisdiction was abolished more than a decade ago. The doctrine is supplemental jurisdiction. There is a federal statute that controls it. That statute is 1367. And as I say, there's a substantial question, given 1367B, whether another New Jersey defendant can be brought in. This will require treatment. Finally, at least three of the parties in this case are listed as limited liability companies. Your brief treats limited liability companies as corporations incorporated in X, principal place of business in Y. They are not. Limited liability companies are treated the same as general partnerships. We need to know the citizenship of every member of all of the limited liability companies. That case is Cosgrove against Bartolotta. And if any of the members of the limited liability companies is a partnership or a limited liability company, we need to know the citizenships of all of those members. It has to be chased all the way through the chain until we get to either corporations or natural persons. So this case should have been summarily dismissed by the district court for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, because the pleadings are transparently defective, and we can't go anywhere until all of that is fixed.
Okay. And at this juncture, then
we will give the parties 10 days for supplemental filings, first on appellate jurisdiction, then on the scope of supplemental jurisdiction under 1367, and then on all of the citizenships of all of the members of all of the LLCs. And only after we pin all of those things down could we get anywhere.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
You can sit down. We'll talk to you when your time comes. If you want to argue the merits, this is your only opportunity.
It's my only opportunity to argue the merits.
There will not be another oral argument.
Okay. Well, then, I wasn't sure whether that was going to be the case or not, so I will continue. Bob Scroop's claim for contribution against Factory Mutual is based on the theory of negligent inspection. At least for the purposes of this motion for summary judgment, these facts are undisputed and were undisputed before the court. Number one, that Factory Mutual sought information concerning the design and installation of the direct fire gas dryers for a printing press. That it sought such information from its insured owner, the owner of the press, that is, RICO, on the written representation that such was necessary to ensure the safe operation of the dryer units. That such information was received and reviewed by Factory Mutual. That RICO expected to be informed by Factory Mutual of any problems with the dryer designs. That Factory Mutual admitted that if it found something wrong with the dryer designs, it would have informed RICO. And finally, that Factory Mutual made no mention of any inadequacies or dangers in the dryers as discerned from such information that it had previously received until after the dryer exploded some 18 months later. In this motion for summary judgment, Factory Mutual argued to the district court that a contract its predecessor insurance company had with the insured RICO provided that it would inspect the insured premises at any time or not at all to be determined by itself. However, if it did inspect the premises or if it reported on what it found, those acts would not be considered as an assumption of a duty towards the insured. Based on this argument, Factory Mutual argued to the district court to find that irrespective of what Factory Mutual said about needing the design information in order to ensure the safe operation of the dryer units or what happened subsequently, the contract language trumped all such facts, rendering them without consequence, at least so far as the jury issue is concerned. The district court agreed and dismissed the case. Now, specifically, the district court found that the contract language, quote, explicitly forecloses the possibility of any such duty to RICO. Furthermore, it found that Factory Mutual's written representation about needing information to ensure the safe operation of the dryer was insufficient evidence that the plaintiff was acting for the benefit of any other party than itself. And Bob's Group contends here that the district court erred in its opinion and decision for several reasons. The first reason is that it grounded its finding that the contract language explicitly forecloses the possibility of a duty on New York policy, not on Illinois law, which Illinois has specifically rejected. In New York and other jurisdictions, there's a public policy that largely prevents the recovery against an insurance carrier for negligent inspections on grounds that allowing such would curtail the inspections to the detriment of the community. The Supreme Court of Illinois in Nelson...
Do any of the Illinois cases on which you rely involve liability running to the tortfeasor?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Do any of the Illinois cases on which you rely involve insurance company liability running to the tortfeasor?
In Nelson, no.
The plaintiff was a victim, not the tortfeasor.
That's correct.
And the claim was the insurance company had some duty or had assumed some duty to protect the victim from the tortfeasor.
Correct.
Are there any cases in Illinois that say that the insurance company has assumed a duty to protect the tortfeasor from its own negligence?
No, Your Honor, but that's not what we're arguing here. What we're arguing here is they owed a duty to RICO. And insofar as RICO is the real plaintiff, so to speak, in this subrogation action, that the insurance company owed a duty to RICO, and that's the basis of our contribution.
Aren't the duties between an insurance company and an insured governed by the insurance policy?
I'm sorry?
The duties between an insurance company and an insured are governed by the insurance
policy. They certainly are.
And the insurance policy here specifically disclaims any additional liability flowing from the inspections.
Absolutely. That is true, except in this particular instance, the insurance policy said that if we made inspections, or if we made reports on those inspections, that act alone won't count as an assumption of duty towards you, in this case, RICO. It does not carry concern, however, a direct representation made in writing in which they said, we want this information so that we can protect you.
I'm now completely lost.
Okay.
Take insurance to one side. Suppose Wrigley hires a safety staff, and they have a duty, I mean, they're Wrigley's employees, to find all the safety problems in Wrigley's workplace.
Okay.
And they fail to find a problem in Bob's dryer, which then explodes. Could Bob's get contribution from Wrigley's employees who failed to find a problem in Bob's dryer?
No, I think in those circumstances, the proper theory would be
Then I don't understand why this is any different.
Because
the duty is to Wrigley, or RICO, acronyms are terrible. If the duty is to Wrigley, it doesn't matter whether it's an insurer or an agent or some other independent contractor or an employee, and I can't see how that does Bob's any good.
Your Honor, in this particular instance, we're arguing that in telling them that they needed information for in order to ensure the safe operation of the press and receiving that information and then saying nothing, then under those circumstances they have assumed a duty.
That's not my question. Suppose this same letter comes from a full-time employee of Wrigley, and his job is safety manager, right? And it says, look, before you put this gas dryer in, you should know the following things. And the gas dryer is installed and then explodes. Could you get contribution from the safety manager?
Of course not. That would be comparative
but
fault.
But then I don't understand why this is any different. Wrigley goes out in the market and it hires advice. It can hire it from an independent contractor, from an insurer, from a safety manager. And let's suppose it doesn't get the advice that prevents Bobco from installing an exploding dryer. It's all the same, so far as I can see.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, Wrigley didn't hire this outfit, but even if they did hire them, I would expect that they would expect from them that they would act in a workmanlike way. And
it
if they were not
the
satisfied.
The same thing from its employees or from an independent safety contractor, from an engineer it might hire for the provision of advice, or, I should think, from Underwriters Laboratories.
What I'm understanding from you, Judge, is that if, in fact, you hire someone for advice and they don't give it to you or they give it to you poorly, then you don't have a cause of action for them. And that's not what we have here.
I'm asking questions of you. You're not asking questions of me.
Yeah, I understand that, Your Honor. But I meant it as a reply. I apologize. I meant it as a reply. I have nothing else to add to that other than, in this particular instance, they agreed to review the press for safety reasons.
Yeah.
And they did not find what they found later after the explosion.
You apparently just don't have the courage of your convictions. You should say that the employee and the independent engineer and anybody else on your theory is also liable to you for failing to prevent you from installing an exploding dryer.
They would be liable under a different theory, Your Honor, not contribution. I do have the strength of my convictions. The conviction is that they would be comparatively at fault insofar as they're an employee. There wouldn't be a distinction between the employee and RICO. In this particular instance, there is a distinction. I sue in contribution, therefore.
Thank you, Mr. Gunn.
I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Reicher.
Your Honors, Counsel, may it please the Court, my name is Brent Reichert, and I'm here to present argument on behalf of Factory Mutual. Summary judgment was correctly decided and granted by the District Court.
Do you have any comments on the jurisdictional issues?
Well, yes, I do, Your Honor. It is true that the Court did not decide all of the issues as it relates to negligence. The Court has not decided cause. It has not decided whether or not Factory Mutual was or was not negligent. The only thing at this point in time the Court has made a determination on is that, based upon the information to date, there is no duty. There is no duty either on the contract, and there is no duty assumed by Factory Mutual Insurance Company to RICO, and therefore there is no cause of contribution, which BOPS currently maintains.
When you were briefing this in the District Court, did either side find any cases dealing with the permissibility of a Rule 54B judgment on a contribution claim in advance of the decision on the merits?
Your Honor, I did not look at that, and I apologize for not looking at that. What we did, I think, was assume that the judge's ruling was very, very narrow in its scope and only related to the scope of whether or not there was a duty. And so that's what we proceeded
on. That's not the issue under Rule 54B and under our precedent. So I trust you'll be looking at this relatedness question now.
I do have one.
How about the citizenship of the parties and the source of subject matter jurisdiction?
Well, presently we have no claims against the other parties. We only have a claim against
BOPS. It doesn't matter who has claims against whom.
You are correct, Your Honor. Those claims of BOPS should be dismissed since there is no subject matter jurisdiction, and they have eliminated diversity jurisdiction by suing entities that are also New Jersey residents and companies.
You mean you know that there are more New Jersey parties in the LLCs? Is that what you mean?
Well, you have raised that issue. I do not know at this point, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, we will look forward to your jurisdictional submissions.
On the merits, Your Honor, nothing in BOP's appellate briefs and nothing said here changes the conclusion made by the district court as it relates to the fact that there is no duty. The language of the insurance contract, as the court has properly pointed out, precludes any such duty on the part of Factory Mutual by clearly stating that any inspections were for the benefit of Factory Mutual alone and should not be relied upon by RICO or anyone else. Another basis the court could rely upon in dismissing the appeal on the merits is the fact that BOPS has failed to present evidence that the loss inspection prevention reports were conducted or were actions taken by Factory Mutual that went beyond Factory Mutual's permissive rights under the contract. A third reason is that because Factory Mutual cannot be found liable to RICO, there is no common obligation to RICO with BOPS, and therefore BOPS' counterclaim must fail. Finally, this court should also affirm the court's grant of summary judgment on the merits because BOPS has failed to present any evidence that it suffered physical harm. Simply put, BOPS has not and cannot claim that it suffered the harm required under Section 324A. The district court properly granted summary judgment when it looked at...
I'm completely lost now. Actually, I recall when reading your brief having a response to that line of argument, the 324A, which said, this just shows that this is not a proper Rule 54B appeal. Because that sounds distinctly like an argument on the merits, right? It's not a completely separable judgment on contribution. It sounded like a totally different line of argument. Might be appropriate on the merits.
Well, I think it is, Your Honor, because under 324A, and BOPS has admitted that that is the only way that they can seek a contribution act against Factory Mutual, is to allege that somehow there was an undertaking or an assumption of a duty under 324A. But 324A requires that the physical harm be to that claimant, to the third person making the claim to injury either to the person or to his property. Here, BOPS has not and cannot claim that it suffered any harm. In other words, BOPS had no property at the factory. BOPS had no employees at the factory. BOPS had no equipment at the factory. Simply put, this court can grant summary judgment or approve the summary judgment based on that fact alone, the fact that BOPS has not suffered the requisite harm under Section 324A. That's why I think that's an argument that we should at least address in the merits. The court looked at the contract, and the contract language is very specific. It states that any inspections conducted by Factory Mutual will not constitute an undertaking on behalf of or for the benefit of the insured or others to determine or warrant that the insured property is safe or healthful. In addition, each inspection report contains the following language. This report is intended to assist you in reducing the possibility of loss to the property insured by Allendale Mutual Insurance Company, which is obviously the predecessor to Factory Mutual. It is not intended to imply that all other hazards and conditions are under control at the time of the inspection. The liability of Allendale is limited to that contained in its insurance policies. No liability is assumed by reason of this report or the inspection on which it is based, as it is only advisory and the final decisions must be made by you. Now, the testimony from the Wrigley or RICO personnel, the division of Wrigley, clearly states that they did not rely upon the inspection reports issued by Factory Mutual. Don Bicking, the production service manager from 1991 to 2000, stated in his testimony, the policy of Wrigley or RICO was not to satisfy Factory Mutual. Wrigley and RICO relied upon the manufacturer of the equipment to satisfy whatever is required. Obviously, Factory Mutual is not the manufacturer. The testimony of Mr. John Jablonski of Factory Mutual also confirms that. The purposes of the inspections, as he testified, were strictly for property protection issues for the benefit of Factory Mutual. In other words, to assess the risk of loss regarding the property policy issued by Factory Mutual. Here, the district court properly did rely upon River Bay versus Allendale. In that case, the court dealt with an insurance contract containing language almost identical to the case at hand. In the insurance contract, Allendale made it clear that it had the right but not the duty to conduct inspections of the insured property, and that in such inspections would be for the benefit of no one other than Allendale. Now, we've also cited a number of cases which I think support this proposition, and those are the Smith versus Allendale case, Philadelphia Manufacturers Mutual, and Johnson versus American Mutual. BOPS even concedes in his brief at page 18 and 19 that generally the cases hold that absent a showing of distinctive efforts or representations by the insurer that inspection services are undertaken for the benefit of the insured, no duty arises, even where a benefit to the insured is incidental. We believe that BOPS improperly relies upon the Nelson versus Union Wire case. The facts are distinguishable in this case. In the Nelson case, the court did not address specific contract language which limits the obligation of the carrier as it does here. Further, the ruling in Nelson relies upon the fact that the insurer had assumed a duty to inspect with care, and that was based on literally dozens of representations by the carrier that the inspections could help improve worker safety, and that the safety inspectors themselves presented to the insured that their job was to make the job safe. Certainly, we do not have that in this case. Factory Mutual sent its loss prevention specialists to perform inspections on an annual basis. In addition, occasionally, when new equipment was installed or talked about, they did look at that equipment. What's happened here is BOPS is attempting to take one reference to the word safe operation or safety in a letter and attempting to make that one reference the linchpin to their entire argument. It's a position of Factory Mutual that certainly that does not meet this requirement. I think Your Honor's touched on one other thing that is a bit confusing in BOPS' position. BOPS seems to be confusing the issue of contributory negligence and a separate counterclaim for contribution. There is no issue of contributory negligence before this court at this point. Certainly, Factory Mutual takes a position that it strongly disagrees that Reichel or Wrigley was contributory negligent, but that issue is not before this court. Bob seems now to rely on the fact that, well, they may not have a duty to Reichel, but somehow they have a duty to itself, and they cite this Hobart case. That case is a medical negligence case rather than a Contribution Act case. Hobart was a situation where a doctor and a patient had a special relationship. The doctor alleged the defense of contributory negligence because the patient killed herself. The patient had been in the doctor's care. Certainly, we do not have that situation here. There is no contractual relationship between BOPS and Factory Mutual. There was no relationship whatsoever. In this subrogation action, a counterclaim for contribution against Factory Mutual is not a proper vehicle for BOPS to raise as a defense of contributory negligence. In any event, it's Factory Mutual's position that it's not contributory negligence. Now, under the Illinois Contribution Act, there is only a right of contribution where two or more persons are subject to liability and tort arising out of the same injury to person or property. Factory Mutual is not subject to liability for the damages suffered by Reichel, because it had no duty to inspect the Reichel premises. In its brief, BOPS relies heavily on Scott and Fetzer versus Montgomery Ward. However, this reliance is misplaced. In upholding the validity of Montgomery Ward's contribution claim against Burns, the court explained that the exculpatory clause in that case only precluded Ward from bringing a direct action against Burns, but did not limit the rights of others to bring a claim. However, because the tenants themselves could bring and did in fact bring a claim against both Burns and Ward were subject to the same liability for the same injury to the same tenants. And therefore, the Contribution Act applied and the court allowed that claim to be brought forth for contribution by Ward against Burns. Here, the exculpatory clause in the contract between Reichel or Wrigley and Factory Mutual expressly provides that Factory Mutual will not assume a duty to Reichel or others to ensure that the Reichel facilities were safe. The legal issues in this case more closely resemble those raised in the Allendale versus Leaseway Warehouse case. There, the court granted summary judgment against Allendale, a subrogee, on its claim against ADT, explaining that any obligation which ADT owes to third persons must derive from the contract between ADT and Leaseway. The contractual limitations on ADT's liability to Leaseway and other parties limit its duty to the plaintiff under Section 324A. In its reply brief, BOPS cites Arkwright versus Garrett and West as being more analogous to the case at bar. However, the Garrett and West case also clearly supports Factory Mutual's position. In that case, Arkwright, the insured, did insure the property of Illinois Bell. Illinois Bell suffered a loss, and Arkwright brought a subrogation action against Garrett and West. Garrett and West then, in turn, brought a third-party complaint for contribution against Telecom. However, the court dismissed that claim because Northern Telecom had a contract with Illinois Bell, which precluded Northern Telecom's liability to Illinois Bell. It's very, very similar to the case that we have here. The contract between Factory Mutual and RICO limits and precludes the liability against Factory Mutual. Therefore, Factory Mutual respectfully requests that this Court of Appeals affirm and grant summary judgment in favor of Factory Mutual Insurance Company.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Counsel. And thank you, Mr. Gunn. The case will be taken under advisement, and we will look forward to the jurisdictional filings within 10 days. Thank you. The Court is in recess until tomorrow.